Okay, very good. So just two announcements. There are two exciting programs that we'd like to make everybody aware of. Number one is the Project Inspire Rosh Hashanah gift campaign is in full swing. The gifts are in, beautiful honey cakes with a beautiful card. They're just $2.99. Please go to Kirov.com and order yours today. You can also be a distributor for your shul and be mechazik the rabbim. So please consider taking an active part in this. It's easy, it's fun, and it makes a wonderful impression on a not yet from yet. The second program is our Sukkot initiative, an opportunity to invite a not yet from Jew to your Sukkot this year. We'd like to have as many people involved in this to get excited and to make a real Kiddush Hashem by making your Sukkah a special place to welcome the Shekhinah. And to register and receive a wonderful free How to Do This kit, you can call 646-461-3339, 646-461-3339, or again, go to Kirov.com for more information. Tonight's special lecture is Rabbi Benzion Klatko, who's been very active and formidable in the Kirov movement. He has been a campus Rebbe at UCLA for many years. He continues to promote this type of activity, and we're honored to have him as our guest speaker tonight. Rabbi Klatko.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Shalom uvracha. So it is Chodesh Elul, and we are hoping that we pass Din. And we know that it's not so simple. And we are looking for the chusim that will allow us to pass Din. And therefore, it's very appropriate that when we have the opportunity to come before Avinu Shabbat Shalom, we understand that one of the biggest zechusim that we can possibly have with us is the zechus of Kirvah Chokim. So, come on. When the Shvatim did not want to leave Binyamin together with Yosef, they turned to Yosef and they said, "Ela el aviv, the hanar einenu yitanu, the nafshay to show the nafshay." Think about what that means. How can we go up to our father? "Ela el aviv, the hanar einenu yitanu, the nafshay to show the nafshay." How can we go up to our Father in Shemayim without the Na'ar with us? Now, you know, I try to think about what is Project Inspired accomplished until now? What does it try to accomplish? Sometimes you think that the same 10 people or the same 50 people or the same 100 people, and you wonder if we're making a dent. You wonder if those who are interested in Kiruv, they're going to come to all the Project Inspire events, and they're going to be the ones giving out Shalach Manas, they're going to be the ones invited to a Sefer, giving Shalom Aleichem and offering to learn. And Rav Chaim Yisrael is not interested. It's not brought up like that. It feels newfangled. It feels like, you know, we have our own problems in the film community, and how are we going to go out and try to solve the world's problems or all the problems in the quality world when we have our own problems? We have shidduchim issues that are raging and are getting worse each and every year. We have kids at risk, and that too is getting worse each and every year. There are many, many, many film families that are living near or below the poverty level. There are families that can't afford tuition. So what are we trying to do? Why are we reaching out and trying to incorporate more Yidden into this big quagmire, this big problem that we're trying to sort out as a people. I once had a lady who was involved in cure for her husband was a Makariv, and she said, you know, in a way I feel odd, I feel strange trying to, trying to do cure when I feel like we're not telling them the whole story. Because if we told them the whole story and we told them how difficult certain parts of Torah are, and if we tell them, you know, they become friends, there are going to be shidduchim problems, there's going to be all sorts of issues, you know, maybe they wouldn't be that interested. And this is from the wife of a big makariv. So I think we have to revisit what we're trying to do in Kiruv. And we have to repackage it, and we have to package it honestly. And if we are able to do that, then I think it will begin to resonate among the rest of Klal Yisrael. Because, you know, it certainly has made great strides in the 12 or so years that I've been involved in the Kiruv. I feel like more people are interested. When I first began doing Kiruv, I used to get questions like, but Lamaisa, has anyone become firm? Have you ever actually seen anyone become firm? No one asks that question anymore. Of course, thousands of people are becoming firm every year. We know that. We've seen it, Baruch Hashem. I've been with Masada Kedushin. Many of my students, I have a Chavur in the Mir, and so do many other Mekarvim out there. But I think that still, even though we have gotten used, even though Klal Yisrael has gotten used to Kiruv, but they still haven't really accepted it. And that's the challenge of Project Inspire. How do we get Klal Yisrael to begin accepting this as a legitimate issue, a personal issue? And when I say personal, because we understand our other personal issues. We understand the kids at risk issue because it hits home. We understand the shidduchim problem, it hits home. Kiruv doesn't really hit home. The opposite. When we do Kiruv, or when we think of Kiruv, very often we think of the person who is very, very vite from what we consider to be home or Hamish. We think of the person many years ago, Mordechai Ben David, when he made up the song, or when he sang the song, I don't think he composed it, the song Just One Shabbos. So he had to, if you didn't listen to the words of the song, this was a prototypical Baal Tshuva in the 1960s, early 1970s. Western Wall on Friday night, in other words, Western Wall on Friday night, first time over there, strapped into his knapsack with his long and curly hair. Right, that's what we picture, a guy with a knapsack backpacking around the world and he's got the long and curly hair. And then we look at ourselves and we don't have long curly hair. We don't walk around with a knapsack. We have a clean cut. We're Yeshiva-like. We're B'nai Torah. And, you know, that's, I mean, this is awesome. It's not really hitting home. And we have so many of our own problems to solve. And because of that, I think it has not yet caught on with most of Klal Yisrael. Now, there are other reasons as well. And it's impossible in this short of time to get into the other reasons why it has not caught on properly. People are worried about the influence of the kids, or people are shy, or people are going to worry about they're not going to know what to say. There are many reasons why it hasn't caught on. But primarily, I think it's a hashkafic problem. And maybe if we can influence others with what we're going to present tonight, then maybe more people will be open to it. So there's a very famous mashal in the Dubna Magid. You all know the mashal. It's used for something different, but I'm going to use this mashal for Kiruv because I think it's appropriate, and therefore I'll repeat this very well-known mashal. And the mashal goes that there was a father who was a wealthy man who was making a chasana for his youngest son. And he had two sons that were older than him. There were two sons that were older than that youngest son who was getting married. And one of those two sons was very wealthy. And the other of the two sons who were married was very impoverished, very poor. And the father calls in the wealthy son, and the father says to the son, listen, it's your brother's chasana. I have three sons, the youngest one. I want it to be b'chofetek. I want it to be beautiful. I want it to be a Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, here is my proposal to you. You have permission to go to the store and buy anything that you need in order to make a cover for me. You can buy your kids the nicest shoes, buy your wife the nicest shetel. You can buy beautiful suits and silk ties. I want you to come to that house and it'll be a big cover for me. You can even come in a wonderful carriage. And at the end of the chasana, come to me, hand me the bill, and I will pay for it. And he tells his oldest son, go to your brother and tell your poor brother the same thing. He can buy everything that he wants, and I will pay for it. No worries, no concerns. Just go and have a field day. It's all for my covenant. So this oldest son comes running back home, goes to his wife, and he says, guess what? We just got Daddy's credit card. Whatever we want, we can buy. And they go out, and they are having the time of their lives. And they go to Macy's, and they go to Jackson Avenue, and they buy absolutely the nicest of everything, the nicest shoes, the nicest ties, and the nicest shapes, and everything absolutely, absolutely top-notch. And they went to the hairdresser, and they each had their hair done properly. The day of the chasana came, and they hired the nicest coach to take them. And the coach was on the way to the chasana, and his father was looking at his children. Each one looked like a little prince or princess, and he was so full of pride. He was so proud. He said, wow, this is going to make such a splash in the chasana. And as they were on their way, suddenly he said, oh, no, I forgot to tell my brother. My brother doesn't know about this. And so he told the coach, you know, make them get up on the next exit, and we have to pick up my brother. And the coach stops in front of the brother's house, and they knock on the door. The brother opens up and says, come, get in the coach right now. It's the chasana. The chasana, yes, there's a chasana, you have to come. But we're on trust, we're only, well, I can't help it, you're going to be late, you can't miss the chuppah, come on in. And the second family joins the first family in the coach. And they arrive in front of the chasana hall, and there is a father standing there in his tuxedo, and out steps the first son. And the first son is looking dashing, and the wife looks spectacular, and the kids look like just absolutely models, and they're walking out, and this father, the Zaidi, he's standing there, and he's proud. What nachas, look what an honorable family. And then comes the second family. And the father walks out, and his pants are tattered, and his shirt is ripped, and his face is dirty, and he looks like he just came out of a coal mine. And then comes the wife, and she looks the same, and the kids, and they're dirty with ketchup stains and mustard stains on their shirt and grime on their face, and the father puts his head down in utter shame. The chasana continued. And after a night of dancing and singing and eating and drinking, the oldest son comes to the father as the waiters are cleaning up the remnants of the dishes, and he hands the father a bill, and he says to the father, okay, this is my bill for you. This is the bill. This is what the shirt, the pants, the coach, the haircut, this is the bill. And the father looks at the bill and says, what are you giving me? He says, this is the bill. You said I should give you the bill for everything that we bought, and that's what I'm doing. I'm giving you the bill. So the father says, I don't know what you're talking about. So now the son begins to get worried. What do you mean you don't know what I'm talking about? You told me anything that we buy, you will pay for. The father said, I never said any such thing. He said, yes, you did. He said, no, I didn't. What I told you is anything that you buy for my honor, I will pay you that for. Anything you buy for my honor. You didn't buy this for my honor. You weren't concerned about my honor. You could have cared less. You cared about yourself. You wanted to use the credit card. You wanted to be dressed to the nines. If you really would have cared about my honor, you would have made sure that your brother knew about it in advance. You would have made sure that your brother looked just like you did with all the nice dress and all the nice garments and the nice coach and the nice shoes and the nice shetel. But you were not concerned about my honor. You were concerned about yourself. I'm not paying you for being concerned about yourself. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, La'achar Me'ev Esrim, and maybe not even La'achar Me'ev Esrim, but in 10 days from now, when we come to Shamayim, and we turn to Hashem, and we say, wow, I had an amazing Elul. Oh, what an Elul I had. Fantastic. I did Shuv, and I did Slichus, and I was Machbet in Shemir Salvation, and it was amazing. I hope you're proud. I hope you realize I did this for your honor. And Hashem says, how could it be for my honor when you have thousands and thousands and millions of Yidden who you could have so easily done something to, where you could have reached out to them for my honor? That would have shown that you wanted it for my honor. You're worried about your neshamala. You're worried about your Gan Eden, your Ganim. That's not what I'm interested in. There's a reason that we say, B'roiv Om Hadras Melech. There's a mitzvah. When we have an opportunity to daven, we could daven in a place where there are more people. Whenever it's shy to go to a place where more people are doing mitzvahs, we go there because B'roiv Om Hadras Melech. What are we saying? We are saying B'roiv Om. When there are many people there, it is a glory to the king. It is a yizah to the king. Hashem is telling us, B'roiv Om Hadras Melech. You want to give me either? You want to glorify me? Well, there's a B'roiv Om. Where's the B'roiv Om today? Where is the B'roiv Om today? I'm going to tell you, I'm one of the national directors of the college movement, college all over North America. And on the college campuses, and you're talking about from the age of 18 to perhaps 24. Perhaps 24, 25, if you include grad school, you have close to 500,000 non-religious. Just from those ages of 18 to 24, 25, close to 500,000. How many people are living? We're living right now in Muncie. We have an upper Saddle River. If you're listening in L.A., how many communities do you have in the valley? How many neighbors do you have that are Jewish, that go to their reform, to their conservative, their unaffiliated, their reconstructionist, their new age temples, what they call a religious service? We have that opportunity. How are we going to say Avinu Malkeinu in 10 days if it doesn't bother us? Now, I imagine that you're passionate about it because you're here. If you're not anywhere else, you're here. So you must be passionate about doing the cure. I'm going to quote something from this week's Parsha. It's always appropriate to quote the Parsha, and somehow Hashem always makes it that the Parsha is Nogea. And this is Parsha that Tamid Savim Mayum Kulchem, Lisei Hashem Olekechem, Roshechem, Shivtechem, Ziknechem, Shadrechem, Kol Yish Yisrael. You're all standing here together. And the different Mepharshim say different things about why this parsha begins like this. Some Mepharshim say it's because, to let you know, after all the klolos that you've heard until now, you should just know you're still standing. The Greeks are not here. The Romans are not here. The Babylonians are not here. So to let Klal Yisrael know, we are still here. I still love you. Acha calls that. The Aruch Chaim says something different. He says like this: V'nira kishabonas Moshe bebris zehi la'achnisam ve'arvus ze'alze. The reason that he made everyone stand together, roshechem, shivtechem, ziknechem, shatzrechem, tapchem, sheichem. The reason he made everyone stand together is la'achnisam ve'arvus ze'alze. What's an arev? Is a cosigner to tell Klal Yisrael as follows. Says Arachaim, Kidei Sheishtadel Kol Echon Be'ar Chadero Lebal Yavor Esti Hashem. That each person should be Mishtadel. Every person in Klal Yisrael has to actively be Mishtadel Be'ar Chadero on his friend's behalf Lebal Yavor Pi Hashem. That he should not transgress the Dvar Hashem. We all have a Chiv, and that's the bris that Moshe Rabbeinu is making Klal Yisrael make on this last day or much that they lose life. You are all chayev for each other. Not, well, they call themselves reforms, so I'm not chayev. They'd feel awkward if I spoke to them, and they wouldn't know what to say, so I'm putter. I'm so. See, you're nitfasim zeh ba'zeh. We should grab, each person should be accountable, this one for the other one. For Eir Anemon Mashagama Oiman, he starts Hashem Akinu, Vaniglai Stano Vanenu, and he finishes with Zesh, Eskayat Kol Echad, Ala Cheiru Ivri, Kifi Ayichoyos Shabiyad Kol Echad. That every person, according to their Yichoyos, is Chayav to go out and make sure that his friend is not over Espi Hashem. Okay. So, now I'll tell you one more thought about this, and then we're going to get a little bit practical. Do you know that when a person does Averis, so we say the end of an Asana Toikif, thank you, we say the end of an Asana Toikif, the Shuva, Utsfila, Utsaka, Ma'avirnas Raya Gzera. So it's an interesting thing because Teshuvah, so I'm being shav Hashem. Tefillah, I'm being misfollowed to Hashem. Tzedakah, I'm not giving Hashem tzedakah. So let's say, thank you. Let's say I only did Azeiros Shabin Adam Lamakam. So the tzedakah do anything for me? I only did Azeiros Shabin Adam Lamakam. Where did tzedakah fit in? The answer is that when I give tzedakah, I show Ivus. When I give tzedakah, I show that every other yid is important to me. And that is the covenant of Hashem. I'm going to give tzedakah, and sometimes the greatest tzedakah, you know, it's interesting, on the college campus, there's a program called Birthright. You know, I heard of Birthright, that they allow people who have never been there at Tzitzel to go for free. They appropriately named it Birthright. Alavai Birthright should actually accomplish what it's meant to. But the idea of birthright is a very holy one, which is that we all have a birthright. And someone, some big gvir, or a number of gvirim said, since you have a birthright to know what it means to be a yid, or to know what the land of Eretz Yisrael is all about, I'm going to make that opportunity available. So when we say birthright, birthright is more than just a 10-day gallivant around Eretz Yisrael. We all, every yid out there has a birthright, and we have the opportunity to introduce them to that birthright. So I'm going to say a yesod that I've said in other talks. We're going to give it an Elul twist, and then we'll make it practical. But we have to know the following. There was a Tzadik born in the year of 1810. It was Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch changed the way Yidden look at Yiddishkeit. He certainly changed the way a friar Yidden looked at it. He became a grand enemy of people like Abraham Geiger and the Reform Movement. And he innovated many things, some that were accepted only in Germany, some not even in Germany, and some only in Germany, but certainly in other places in Eastern Europe were not accepted. But one of the innovations of Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch we can learn from till this day. And that is, when the Haskalah movement began, when Reform and Conservatives began, they had the Shtetl Yid on his toes. They had him back up against the wall. They brought down all sorts of literary figures, scientific data. They knew research. As the Shtetl Yid heard about these findings and didn't know what to make of them. He did not know the authors. He did not know the scientists. And he felt a little bit ignorant. And Yiddishkeit, in a certain way, in many people's eyes, were back on its heels. Comes Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch, and he put us back on the offensive. And he said, you guys are wrong. We've got it right. We're happy about it. We have the simcha. We are going to live lives of meaning, lives of purpose. And it's up to you. You have skull yid. I want you to show me what you have to offer. Show me its track record. And as, of course, we know that its track record ended up being abysmal and so destructive for Claudia, so that 200 years later we're still reeling from what Haskalah did to us. Sazam Shamshon Volosh, you have to prove yourself to us. We have it. We have Raimimus. We have HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have Masorah. And it's all in a very intellectual way. And this is something they weren't expecting. They weren't expecting this. There were a number of other Gedolim at that time who put Klal Yisrael on the offensive. They included the Malbim. They included the Manatzchias. These were people who put Klal Yisrael on the offensive and said, look, the From Yidden, look, you have a lot to be proud of. And I think that we once again, and you know, this is one of the many avos of the internet is as follows. We know that we're not perfect. We know that we're not perfect. We're not perfect. We try. We have a Yetzer Hara. We have a Yetzer Tov. We have the Torah that is supposed to be Machzor L'Mutov. But Yidden and Fum Yidden sometimes slip, and we do slip. And it used to be if a Yid slipped in Kovna, then the Yid in the towels would not have heard about it necessarily. And certainly, a Yid in Germany wouldn't have heard about a Yid in Kovna if a Yid in Kovna swindled that did something that was really inappropriate. Today, because of the internet, every little bit of schmutz that every Yid, the Sfat, from Yidden do, is available within 5 minutes of when we do it. And it's all pooled together, often on one site. Now, why it's necessary to be mefarsim every avla that Frumia does is beyond me. But one of the effects that it has on us is if we begin to lose our self-esteem as Frumia. Oh, nocha, you did this, nocha, rabbi, nocha this, nocha, teacher, nocha this, and it's all pulled together. And Lav Dafka, is it any worse than it ever was in our history? Lav Dafka. We've always had a Yetzirah. We've always had Yidden. Some were good and some were not good, and some were Echa B'Pev, Echa B'Lev. But today, the fact that we can read it all in one spot and it's all pulled together, one of the things is it puts us back on our heels. We find ourselves once again not able to be on the offensive. We find, and when I say offensive, I don't mean in a hardened offensive. I mean a self-confident kind of offensive. Right? We don't have that ability to look and say, you know, I shrein my kozchol kamer, my non grammar. Because we're like, oh, yeah, what's going on? What's going to be? Now there's kids at risk, and now there's this, and now there's swindling. And so the first thing we have to know is that if we're going to be in a cuv, we have to get back on the offensive. We have to get our pride back in what we have to offer the world. And I don't mean with proofs, I mean we're right and you're wrong. I mean, I scream like a volcano, my goodness gracious. All you need to do is we can compare and see as bad as we are and as much as we have fallen. We're such a hailing of people. We do so much good. We're not just saying that the Kari to Hashem, we say that ourselves. Who's got Chazerim? Who has Atzala? Who has Tomchei Shabbos? Who has one Yad Sar? Who has one organization after the next? In my son's yeshiva, it's unbelievable how many Ben Gemachs there are. There's a pen Gemach and a paper Gemach and an eraser Gemach and a tape Gemach and a CD Gemach and a this Gemach and then we have in the yellow pages a page and a half. Just a Gemach. Someone can do away with that. It's not going to bite, but it's big. We're an amazing people. It's astonishing what we are. And you know, just a little bit of perspective. We all know that if you're married and you're paying taxes, you're paying for school. So we're paying for school. And yet, every year, every Frum Yid who sends their child to a Beis Yaakov or to a Cheder says, you know what? Whatever I'm spending in this public school, part of my taxes, whatever comes out to be, I'm willing to throw that out in the covered Shemayim. And not only am I willing to throw it out, I'm going to take more money, a lot more, much, much more money, a lot more than the taxes would have been, and I'm going to invest that in my children because I want them to have a chelik in Klal Yisrael. Who's like us? Who's like us? Who gets together with the family? Who puts Shemir Salashim stickers on their telephones because they want to remain chelik? Who has so many dial-a shiurim that some phone bills are just astronomical? Who has it? Look at our songs. And the Gaish Adon, one song after the next is about priests and love and this and that. And by all, one song after the next. Yes, I just drove to Ottawa, and I bought a Shweki tape, and every song there is another Tehillah to Hashem. Slow, fast. Yeah, alternating, but they're all beautiful Tehillah to Hashem. It's an amazing thing. So I think we have to get our pride back. We have to know that, Yodeinu al ha'elyonim. Okay. Now, I spoke about repackaging Kiruv to the rest of Klal Yisrael. So here's the plan, and I've spoken, and this Indian, if you've heard me speak before, you've heard the Indian, but I'm going to give it a little twist. I like to say that if you look in the entire Torah, how many times is Judaism called a religion? Actually, it's called once. It's called once by Haman. Haman called us a religion. He wanted to put us in the religion box. I ask my college students, what is Judaism? They say it's a religion. I say, no. So then they start saying, oh, it's a tradition, it's a way of life, and that, whatever euphemism they can find. But religion, it certainly is not. Haman says it does say Amishanois. They're a different religion. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not call us to religion, and the sooner we understand that prat, the sooner we can understand what we're trying to do in a Kiruv. What are we if we're not a religion? What are we? What are we called again and again and again and again and again and again and again? That's right. We are called hundreds and hundreds of times in the Torah a relationship. We are called a relationship. Not a religion, a relationship. As a matter of fact, there's really no time for it. But if you look at the Sefer Shmos and you want to understand the give and take between the Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the whole bikuach they had from the moment they left Mitzrayim as they were being brought to the Midbar, as they wandered in the Midbar, and as they were being brought there, so the whole bikuach, the whole machloitis was whether they're religion or relationship. Klal Yisrael was really stuck in religion mode. They'd been in a religion in Mitzrayim, and they figured they're exchanging one religion for the next. Comes on Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, I'm not interested. Thanks, but no thanks. You want to be in a relationship with me? I will be in a relationship with you. You don't want to be in a religion? No. And then, the differences are profound, and they're so profound, and I'm going to give you a sort of an abridged version because I want to tie it in to Yom Tov and show how you could use this. But they're so profound that after speaking, just getting this point across, I was speaking at the University of Maryland. A girl comes over to me afterwards and says, Rabbi, I want to tell you, I had planned on going to grad school beginning this fall, and instead I would like to enroll in a seminary. Just repackaging what Yiddishkeit is, and it's not full, it really is that. What does it say in the Torah? B'nei b'chor Yisrael, im yalech ha'shuim, kol dodi hinezeh bodosek. Again and again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu calls us a religion. I'm sorry, calls us a relationship, not a religion. Again and again, Abbas Olam Beisa Amcha Avta. There's love. Avinu Malkeinu. There's a relationship. If there's a relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, there's hope. If there's a religion, there's no hope. And just to define the differences. Baruch Hashem, we have many kids, and each kid, one of the guys' favorite parts of having children, not the women, but the men's, one of the favorite parts of having kids is the ride to the hospital. The guy gets in the car, sticks his keys in, and he's off to the races because he knows he can go through every red light with impunity. That's right. That's what we're thinking about. Sorry. Yes, here we go. Here's the red light. Because what's going to happen if they don't stop you? Great. And if they do, you say, hey, my wife is in labor. Then you get a police escort. So either way, you are covered. You know why? Because we are not in a relationship with the government. It's more like religions, do's and don'ts. And if you can prove why it shouldn't apply to you for whatever reason, then you've gotten off scot-free. If that's your attitude in a relationship, hey, let me see if I can get out of things. So then you're in a bad relationship, right? That's what you're always trying to get out. That's the difference between religion and relationship. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, we are in a relationship, you and I. But Klal Yisrael, although they never got it totally, which is why they were not allowed into Eretz Yisrael eventually, they did get it a little bit. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, would you like to accept my Torah? Says Klal Yisrael, Na'aseh v'nishmah. I will do, we will do, and we will listen. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Migilah Rabbanai Razeh, Sheh Malachi Asher Es Mishtam Shembo. Who taught my children this secret that the angels use? What is that secret? What's the great secret? So they teach you in school, because look at that. They said, Na'aseh v'nishmah. What didn't they say? Nishma v'nasa. What's the difference? Well, nishma v'nasa means I'm going to listen, and if I like it, I'll do it, and if not, not. Nasa v'nishma means I'm going to do it regardless. Now let me just listen to make sure I know what to do. You know the real secret is? You know the real laws is? Nishma v'nasa is religion. Nasa v'nishma is relationship. That was the laws. It was a whole different paradigm. Nishma v'nase, I'll listen, it's religion, I'll see, does it resonate with me, is it speaking to me, is it not, okay, then nase, I'll do it. Nase v'nishma means I'm in a relationship, and that was the secret. The secret is that you can have a relationship with the Almighty. That's a secret. Christians don't believe that. Christians, they say, he can't have a relationship with the Almighty, says the Christians, because he is too great, he is so removed, he is so perfect, we are so imperfect. You need a go-between. You need a go-between. The rub is you don't need a go-between. That was the secret. Of course, Christ all struggled with that. That's why they built an Egel Azah. They built an Egel Azah because you need a go-between. You can't really have a relationship. Now, let's understand something that poses a little bit of difficulty. Why Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Why both? A little strange. This is bothering me. I mean, a lot of people have this in the back of their mind. Why both? Well, Rosh Hashanah is if you're completely zakai or completely chayev. Okay. Hopefully we're not completely chayev. And I don't know how many people are completely zakai. Four people that were completely zakah all their lives. That was it. Binyamin was, Yishai was, Kalav was. Right? Most people are not zakah. So we're not zakah. So let's just skip Rosh Hashanah and move on to Yom Kippur. What's the point? What's the point of Rosh Hashanah? That's really, it's an interesting question. What's the point? So, we have to know there's a rule when it comes to relationships. The rule goes like this. If you're in a relationship, the very first part of the relationship is you have to understand the greatness of the person you're in a relationship with. If you don't understand the greatness of that person, you can't be in a real relationship. If Albert Einstein's wife says, you know, Albert Mapschmath, I love your hair. Well, maybe she does, and maybe she loves him. But if she doesn't understand the fact that she's married to one of the greatest mathematicians, one of the greatest minds in history, then it cannot be complete. And he certainly will not feel that it's complete. Understand? So you have to appreciate the greatness. That's the step before love. Then comes love. And then what comes after love? What comes after love is trust. Trust. So that's actually, if you look at all of davening, if you look throughout the Torah, those are the three steps. You'll find a pattern again and again. First comes understanding greatness, understanding your value, then comes love, and then comes trust. Let's just show how the pattern repeats itself a few times, then we'll show how it applies to Rosh Hashanah. So let's see, you have in davening. You have in davening, first in Shemona Esrei, and Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. Okay, I go to I give our banora, right? So you understand the greatness, and then Laman Shmo Ba'ava, then comes love, and then comes Benam Aratam Achilas Meisim, then trust. Greatness, love, then trust. Let's see how that works from Myrus. Myrus, the first Baruch of Myrus is Asher b'dvara ma'ar b'arav b'chach ma'pasech sham v'itzvon m'shanit ma'achol v'zazman. You manipulate the whole world, all of the stars and the moon and the sun. It's all yours. That's the first bracha. Second bracha is Abba Soil. Then comes the love. First comes to understand the greatness. Then comes the love. Abba Soil based on Ra'avta. What comes there? And then the epitome of that love is Shema, which is Ra'avta as Shem Elokecha. What's the bracha after? What do we say after Shema? Myers? Then Munakoza is trust. So you see, greatness, love, and trust. That's the pattern. Greatness, love, trust. And that's how it works in real relationships. One of the problems with the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim is that they did not have, they understood the greatness. The greatness they saw. Why? Because they saw the Makkos. But they didn't have the trust. They didn't have the trust. How do we know they didn't have the trust? Here, I'll ask you a strange question. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to make himself? No, we should have skipped that step. I mean, honestly, 10 Makkos is more than enough. We've destroyed Mitzrayim. Let's march on to Eretz Yisrael or march on to Har Sinai. It's sort of like, you know, it's sort of like the movie where you think the villain is dead, you get 10 Makkos and he's dead, and then you turn your back and the villain somehow crawls towards the gun and you got to get him a second time. And that's the answer. Why do HaKadosh Baruch Hu need to make that second step? The answer is that when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they didn't truly trust in Hashem. You know, they left, but there was a safety net. They knew we can go out, but we can always go back. They'll always take us back. That's why it says in Bishach, the very beginning, "Vlonachem alekim de'achers plishtim ki karavu ki amalekim paninachem aam b'roisam b'chama b'sham b'sham." They're going to be worried about war, and then they're going to come back to Mitzrayim. Says Hashem, I want the Jewish people to trust me. So what does he do? He puts their back against the wall, and that's Kriyas Yam Suf. On one side is the Yam Suf. On the other side is the Cher of Mitzrayim. And only then does it say, Vayaminu B'Hashem Moshe Avta. Only then does it say they trusted Hashem. It was trust. That was the issue. The issue was trust. Okay. Now we're going to show how it applies to Erev and Kiruv. Why do we have to have Rosh Hashanah? The answer is, we cannot possibly do teshuva until we are makir who we are doing teshuva to. We cannot possibly have a relationship with Hashem, which is really what Hashem wants. Hashem really wants a relationship. Let me point something out over here. People think of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and the first words that come to their mind are mi ba mayim, mi ba esh, mi ba cherev, mi ba chaya, and it's scary, and you think, wow, this is a scary day, and look at all these kinds of death. But I want to point something out. That's actually the only place in the entire davening that we speak about the kinds of punishment that are available. The whole Yom Kippur, one time. The Orosha one time, the rest of it, and even that, we don't actually say, you're going to get chayav. Leave my mind. Who is going to end up getting judged by this? It's a scary thing. But it's not throughout the davening. You don't actually see that. What do you see in davening again and again? You don't see the scary. You see the Malkeinu. You see the call to understand and have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now, let me tell you how to present the Tefillin Yidden and how we can use the emphasis. To from Yidden, we have to tell them like this. The reason that we concentrate on Kiruv is not because we think that Kiruv is necessarily more important than kids at risk or than Shidduchim or than the poverty level and the jobs and all the different sorrows. The reason that we do it is because we're in a relationship with Hashem. And if we're in a relationship with Hashem, then our hearts cry out. When we see it, we can't help but be motivated to act. Not only that, but let me point out that we could be doing a lot more about each of those in the Anim that we are grappling with. We could be doing more about Shiduchim. We could be doing more about Kiddush. We really can. That's the truth. We can, and we should. But it is a little more difficult. I can't really force a Shiduch to happen. Kiddush is a little bit different. There's nothing stopping you from going to your neighbor next door with a challenge. This week, actually, we went next door. There was a garage sale there. Turned out both the husband and the wife were looking at themselves like Christian. Both of their mothers were Jewish. So we got into the talk about cooking, and the lady was telling us how she cooks from Moroccan kind of dishes. I said, "Do you ever hear of challenge?" "No." I said, "You got to try it." And the Shabbos lunch. My wife put a challah in the pot. I went over, knocked on the door, told her I'd eat it. We put some delicious soft kishka in there, and we did it. Right? It's easier to make me a shidduch. It's just giving them challah. So it is, you know. Inviting them to a sukkah. Right? It's easier than, don't think, but it's not a matter of easier. It's a matter of, if we're in a relationship with Hashem, we have to say, Ech elel ovid tehanari naimili tano. How can we do it? How can we do it? The great ones in Klal Yisrael, they were compelled to act, not because they were looking for glory, chas v'shalom, and not because they were obsessive compulsive, and not because they were so, not because they had nothing to do with their lives, but because they couldn't help themselves but act. So, if we can present that, if you truly love Hashem, and you're truly in a relationship, then it has to bother you enough to act. And if it doesn't bother us enough to act, we have to look in the mirror and ask ourselves that devastating question. Maybe we are not in the relationship with Hashem that we think we are. Maybe we're not. Because if we were, and we would understand the agony that Hashem has, like the Gemara in Brachos says, every day a voice calls out from the churmas of Yerushalayim, says, "Oy, my beloved, oy to the father who has to send his child in the al shulchanai." Hashem cries. Hashem screams as a shoyeg yishar ka'ari. He screams, roars like a lion. Where are my children? So if we really, really, really care. And how can we, it's not my thing, I'm not a Makarev. Wait, are they born Makarevim? Are they born, do you get a certificate? Right? If you're paid, then you're a Makarev, you don't get paid. Some of our best Makarevim were people who were not paid, they volunteered, and if you look at the project in spite of the video, you'll see these were not the professionals, these were the lay people who were compelled to act. Rosh Hashanah is coming up. What can we do? So, as I mentioned earlier, in Projects Inspired, there's the opportunity to give to your co-workers, your neighbors, your Jewish people who come into your stores, to give them a little something to let them know that another Yid cares about them. When I was a rabbi at UCLA, we went to the dormitory at UCLA, and we handed out little honey cakes. And we wished everyone a sweet year. And guess what? The kids remembered it for the entire year. "Hey, Rabbi, I love that honey cake. Thank you." "Well, you know what? You know what? We got more where that comes from. And what about challah? You like that also? Matzo ball soup, you like?" Right? Yeah, that's what, we have this golden opportunity. You blow a shofar, find out. Maybe there's a nursing home, and not just the chesed, but maybe there are people who you can help re-inspire. Let me tell you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu may not blame us for the difficult to reach hedonistic people. Maybe people in Hollywood, certain people, they're just so entrenched that it would take you years to get them to move at all. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell you that there is low-hanging fruit. And the low-hanging fruit is there for the picking. I'm going to tell you, when I was on campus, there was a rabbi with me who was doing kiruv. And we had a trip to Eretz Yisrael, and it was going to be a firm trip. There was going to be all sorts of
touring, it'll be a wonderful trip, but the trip essentially to introduce people to Frumkeit, Yiddishkeit. And there was a student who walked by, and he was looking at the table, and this coworker of mine, and he was just waffling, should he pull the trigger or not? And before he had a chance to pull the trigger, to ask, speak to the guy had moved on to the table next door to us, which was a Hillel table. The Hillel on most campuses is secular. Very often they're very anti-Frum. And in this particular case, one of the heads of the Hillel was at the table, not every Hillel, but this particular Hillel, one of the heads of the Hillel was at the table, and that head of the Hillel began speaking to the student. Well, by the time the head of the Hillel finished speaking to the student, my coworker got the guts to go over to him, and he said, oh, and he began schmoozing him, and then he said, you know, I want to tell you something. We do a trip to Israel, and I think you would love it. And the guy said, wow, that's such a pity. Like 5 minutes ago, I just signed up. I was taking the first trip. I'm going to just take it. And I was at the Hillel table, and they signed me up, and I promised them I would go, and I keep my word. This person was a lovely person. It took us about 3 years to get them to be reinterested. They went on a secular trip, and they heard all sorts of things about Frum Yidden. And it's been a struggle. Baruch Hashem, we're still in touch with this person 12 years later. But we blew it. We were 3 minutes too late. There are low-hanging fruit everywhere. Your neighbors, your friends, your coworkers, there are even people online that are low-hanging fruit. There's a tremendous, tremendous story. I was walking in the old city of Yerushalayim, and I met this boy. You could see he was probably post-college, 22, 23 years old, and he was wearing a yarmulke and he had tzitzis. So I said, tell me, what's the story? He said, that was about truth, and I like to hear correct stories. So he said, oh, yeah, well, I'll tell you. He said, the truth is, my mother was Jewish, but my father was German, not Jewish. And he made sure that I grew up a devout Christian. Well, I went to church. I was a very devout Christian. And then one day I was in church, and the priest got up, and he lashed out against Jews. And he said the following words, it's a pity that Hitler did not finish off the job. Now, I looked at myself like a Christian, but I did know that my mom was Jewish, and it really bothered me. So I went home and I just began Googling, researching, what does that mean? Why should Hitler finish off the job? What's so bad about the Jews? And I began learning more about my Judaism. And then one day, I bumped into this video on YouTube. And that video had a young bacher that made him a video. And the video was a rebuttal why Judaism does not believe in Christianity, why Yashka could not be the Messiah. And I had never heard such a thing. I was so interested that I went to his next video. And he put up the second video, and the second video was simply him showing how to put on tefillin. He made a video and put on YouTube, what is the proper way to put on tefillin? I was so interested that I emailed this fellow. I said, wow, this is so interesting. So this fellow who lives in Flatbush, who is his age, about 22 years old, bought a pair of tefillin and sent it to him. He sent him the pair of tefillin, and this boy began putting on the tefillin, and from there, one thing led to the next, and he's learning in the yeshiva now for an entire year. There are low-hanging fruit. People just want to hear a little bit of inspiration, a little bit of emes. We have to be able to reach out. We have to say, Ech el el others. This Rosh Hashanah, I would make a bet, even the people who are sitting here in the room, if you make it a goal that between now and Rosh Hashanah, you will meet up with at least one person and make sure that they end up at a Frum family for Rosh Hashanah, between now 10 days to find one Frum person, I guarantee there will be 10 more Frum eating by a Frum table this Rosh Hashanah. And that challenge goes for everyone who's listening on the telephone as well. find one person to share Rosh Hashanah with. It's just not that hard. That's the truth. And that's our relationship with Hashem. We turn to Hashem and we say, you know, we will not come to this chasana and not tell our brothers about it. Whatever that chasana is, that olam haba, that Gan Eden, we're not going to. The low-hanging fruit. I was in Ottawa yesterday and I met a fellow. And that fellow, he came to me and said, oh, you know, I was actually at your house a few years ago. I said, yeah, my Baruch Hashem, we have many groups coming to the house. I should follow up with all of them. But they are rabbis as well. I said, so what? I was the best Shabbat of my life. I said, so what happened? So he said, well, I began keeping Shabbat. I said, really? You're still keeping? Oh, well, actually, a few months ago, I just got a little weak. And now I feel terrible. I should count for something, you know. I feel bad, but I'm not keeping Shabbat anymore. I said, what are you doing in the winter? He said, oh, I'm taking winter class. I said, I think you need to go to yeshiva. He said, Rabbi, I can't. I need to take winter classes. So I said, my friend, I want to tell you something. Do you know how hard it is to get inspired? How many movies do you watch until there's one that just really you think about and really touches you? Right? How many books do you have to read? How many poems? How many songs? But the one thing that really hits home, you were inspired and you're letting that precious commodity of inspiration go. Can't be. It can't be, my friend. You need to go to yeshiva. You have to put off. You don't need to go to class during those 4 weeks in the winter. So he looked at me and said, Rabbi, you know, you're right. I said, great, let's sign you up right now. And I called over the other rabbi, and we signed him up, and he went to yeshiva this winter. Am I a magician? No, he was low-hanging fruit. That's the answer. He was low-hanging fruit. He had been to a Shabbat experience. He had inspiration. He was inspired at the time. So I knew that the inspiration had a makom to grow. And then it just took a suggestion. Sukkot is coming up. Do you know how many opportunities there are in Sukkot? They're intrigued. They're interested. What's the worst that they have? They'll say, I'm not interested in joining you in your sukkah. So you drive. And what's the best that can happen? You'll create doros. You'll create generation after generation. We have golden opportunities that are in front of us at all times. And I think that's what we have to say. When we say tshuva tefillah tzedakah, even if you're not a big zir, and even if you don't have thousands and thousands of dollars, there's another kind of tzedakah. You can give a person back their real birthright. What is tzedakah? But what Hashavas HaVeda that is. Now, what does that do to Hashem? If a person comes to Hashem on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and they say, Hashem, I didn't do everything I was supposed to do. My davening was not the davening I wanted it to be. My minyan attendance was not, my learning wasn't, but I want to tell you that I love you so much. And you know that it's not because I don't believe, it's not because of any, I have where to grow. But just to show how much I love you, I brought with me a friend. I brought with me two friends, and I want to reintroduce them to Avinu Shabbat Shamayim. And I'll end off with those wonderful words that we say in Yedid Nefesh. They're so powerful. We say in Yedid Nefesh, Hadur Na'a Ziv Ha'olam, beautiful, shiny one, the beauty of the whole world. Now she cholas av lotecha, my nefesh is lovesick for you. Lovesick for you. I'm so in love with you, Hashem. I'm sick. I'm pashut sick. I don't know what to do. I'm lovesick for you. What am I supposed to tear out my hair? What can I do to show you that I want to have a relationship? Ana kel na refanala, please, Hashem, cure me, refanala, cure me of that love sickness. And there's only one way you're going to cure me, Hashem. Baharas banam zivecha, by showing me the beauty of your countenance. Show me that you'll always be there with me. Show me that you've got my back. Show me that you're going to hold on to my hand. Show me that Klal Yisrael will not always remain in Galus. Show me. And only then will I become strong. Only then will I be healed. Only then will I be healed of my love sickness. I will have everlasting happiness. We want to have that everlasting happiness only with a relationship with Hashem. And if we can tell from the Yidden, Kiruv is about a relationship with Hashem. You're in a relationship, reach out. Okay? Thank you very much. Should I take any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Klotzko, for inspiring us. We're going to try hard to not let that inspiration get away from us. We'll take the wonderful message and find our people in our circle of influence and invite them to our homes, to our lives, and to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Everybody have a wonderful evening. Gemar Chasimah. Ksivah Chasimah Tavah to everyone.